It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartbreak. I have seen that happen. Having trouble with this one? 3 nights a week, take a meeting into a prison. See what happens to you. Get down to central office and start answering the phones. Get early to your home group, make the coffee, set up the chairs, stay late, wash the cups, put the ashtrays away, fold the chairs. Get out there and get it on the road for the newcomer and see what happens. It will go away. I have been astounded to watch what's happened on that. Absolutely astounded. And now we have what pilots call a checklist. It says, if we have been thorough about our personal inventory, well, there's an if. We have written down a lot. Well, if you followed these directions that we have just discovered in this book, you will have written down a lot. It says, we have listed and analyzed our resentments. Okay, I remember where we did that. We covered those directions. It says, we have begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We've talked about how futile they were. We've talked about dying from them. I bet there are other people in this room who've seen that. We have commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. Yeah, we looked at that. It says, we have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies, for we look on them as sick people. I remember that. We did some prayers and observations about that. We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct. We did that in the sexual misconduct inventory, and we did that in the resentment inventory, and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. Yep, I remember where we saw that. So it seems to me that if we've done those things, then we've been complete. I've got some other notes that I want to read from my own experience, and I'm going to go back to fear for just a second. There was a fellow named Johnny who used to come to my home group, and he had a tire iron under his front seat, and he had a knife in his pocket, and he had a pistol in his boot, and he had some shotguns at the house. And he says, I ain't afraid of nothing. And when he'd been sober about 6 months, he said, you know what? I'm afraid of everything. That's why I got to have all that. It's funny how little I know about myself until I begin to take these inventories. A lot of what I believed about me turned out to be untrue. If you had asked me the day before I got sober if caffeine affected me, I would have said absolutely not. And it didn't. And if you drink as much scotch as I was, it probably wouldn't affect you either. And it took me a year to figure out that I can't do caffeine. I can have a cup in the morning. I can have an iced tea at lunch. I have to stop there. Because if I have a cup of coffee, even decaf with you good people at an 8 o'clock meeting, I'm not sleeping that night. How many other things are there about me that I didn't know when I got here? It was important to me. Because this magnet through the junkyard of life metaphor that we talked about before, as these things drop away, we're going to discover who I really am. And I didn't have a clue. I didn't have the faintest notion who I was because I had been an act all of my life. I had pretended to be who I thought you wanted me to be all my life, and I didn't know who I was. I did not know. I have a friend, a woman who was held at gunpoint in a bank robbery. She's in recovery. And when she came out of that situation, she analyzed it and she said, you know, my fear was all in the future. Granted, I'm standing there in the bank and this guy's got a stocking over his head and a pistol in my ear holding me like this. But she said, you know, I was really okay. I wasn't doing what I wanted to do, and I wasn't physically very comfortable. But my fear was in the future. Fear is in the future. There's a fellow named Doug D. out of Dallas who does a wonderful discussion about self, and I've changed it slightly. But it's that resentment and depression are when I wasn't getting my will in the past. Anger is when I'm not getting my will right now. And fear is the concern that I will not get my will in the future. What is the problem? Continues to come back to my will. Isn't it astounding? Isn't it just astonishing? I'll tell you, back on the fear thing just a little bit too. I had a guy after I did one of these sessions one time say, well, he said, the reason I look both ways before I step off a curb is because I'm afraid I'll get run over by a bus. To me, that's not a fear. That sounds to me like intuitively no. That it's in my own best interest to look both ways before I step off of a curb. When we talk about fear, I'm talking about that gut-wrenching, petrified thing. And I've had the experience of needing to get rid of some fears on a couple of occasions. I had some things that turned brown and began to stink rather badly in my business a while back. And I found myself in fear again. And what fear is a reassertion of my will. It's the reemergence of ego every time. And what I had to do was a prayer that I discovered was a way to... I heard people since I got sober, they say, turn it over to God. Nobody can tell me how. I found out how. What I do is I take a situation and I discover by inventorying what do I think is the very worst possible thing that can happen here. Now, that's a judgment on my part. I'll give you that. But what do I think is the worst case? In this particular situation, the worst case was I lose the business, I go bankrupt, I lose the house, I lose one of the cars, and I have to get a real job working for somebody else. All right? Because I'm self-employed. That's the worst thing I could imagine that could possibly happen. And so I took that as a package to God. And I said, if this is your will, send it. And I didn't mean it. See, that was a problem. That was the problem right there. It's because I wanted it my way. Because I figured if I could turn over what I thought was the worst case, I'd turn over everything else. And I prayed that prayer every time I thought about it. See, my spirituality had been gone for a couple of weeks, and it took me that long to realize that it was gone. My spiritual contact was gone. And I prayed that morning and night, added it to my morning and evening prayers, and every time I thought about it during the day, I laid that thing out, and I said, Father, if this is your will, send it on. And I didn't mean it, and I didn't mean it, and I didn't mean it, and I kept praying it. And all of a sudden, one day, I meant it. And what happened is I'd step back into the sunlight of the Spirit. See, the first requirement for me to have anything if I'm going to walk this walk is I don't have to have it. If I've got to have it, I've put it before God, and I stand in its shadow. The first requirement is I must be able to hold it in an open hand. I must be. And I held at that time, finally, I got my job, my economic situation held in an open hand again. And I'm not saying this is cause and effect, but 3 days later it turned around and took off like a rocket. I don't know. But the important piece is that I was at peace. It was okay. Because as long as I had this program, this contact with God, as long as I could stay sober and be one of you people, I was going to be okay. My will, God's will. Two bowling balls. Pick one. It's not 95 and 5. I'll handle money and sex and he can handle the rest. It's not the deal. It's not the package. It's not what the third step prayer said. It's not what it said. It worked for me. What I discovered was that I'm trapped. When I got sober, I discovered... See this right here? See it right there? You probably think of that as skin. That's a prison. I'm stuck in here. You know what I mean? I used to get out all the time. You know, I'd go be somebody else. I did a lot of things I used to be able to do. I'm stuck now. And the first thing I had to do if I was going to live in here 24/365 was clean it up so I could stand it. And the fourth step is the beginning of the house cleaning. I heard a girl in a meeting at the Mustard Seed in Chicago. If you ever get a chance to get up there, it's a great clubhouse. She said, my priority is not what I say it is. My priority is what I do. Priority is what I do. If I want to know what my priorities are, I don't listen to my words about the future. I take the evening half of the 11th step and look into my past and see what got done. And what got done was a priority. And what did not get done was not a priority. And anything that I am saying to the contrary is a lie that I'm telling me. And I did not like that the first time I heard it. And it's the truth. And I think that's why it's so important for me. So what's my priority? My priority is what gets done. It's what is accomplished. Important piece. There's something else to me that's very important. We talk in the third step about God's will, and that was a frightening concept. So many of us as children were told when Aunt Sarah died that it was God's will. I mean, God's will got a bad name. And I had to take my own concept, what I believe that phrase, God's will, meant, break it into two pieces. And one of them is things like, what am I going to be when I grow up? Where am I going to live? Who am I going to live with? How much money am I going to make? What's going to happen to my children? Do the communists eventually take over the world? Every bit of that violates one day at a time. And not being in management, according to the first step, I don't need to know. Leaves me with my own concept of God's will. And that is very simply, what would the Master have me do today? And I know what God's will is for me. It's to act like one of his kids. I'm a citizen. I vote. I drive a car. Put your blinker on around me in traffic. I'll let you in. I say please and thank you. Yeah. That's big news in Nashville. Some days. I'm trying to be a good dad to my kids. I'm trying to be a good husband to this fabulous wife that I have. And I act like I'm married all the time. All the time. I'm an alcoholic. I've got a sponsor. I sponsor some guys. I go to a lot of meetings. I read the text. I read 2 pages a day in the big book, just two. It's a discipline. I read the big book 4 times a year. 2 pages a day. That's the word discipline and the word punishment meant the same thing in the home I grew up in. The word discipline comes from the same root word as the word disciple. It means follower. So when I discipline myself, I don't punish me. What I do is I choose to follow. So I know what God's will is for me, is to act like one of his kids. I'm a child of God. I pray. I meditate. And I try to treat you guys like brothers and sisters. Loved brothers and sisters. I know what God's will is. There's an important piece for me in the third step. Really important. A lady I know in Nashville says that prayer is not a chance to change God's mind. It's not a sales opportunity. It's an opportunity for God to change my mind, which is the one that needs to be changed. I want to talk just a little bit about sponsorship. My fifth sponsor died in May 4 years ago, and Don was a beautiful guy, and he had... I could talk about him for the next hour. I'm going to stifle myself and just say that I needed to be sponsored. Sober 11 years, and I needed to be sponsored, and there was no question about it. And if you're new and you're looking for a sponsor, I want to tell you what I looked for. Because I had the 5 best sponsors any man ever had, and I asked myself what were their common characteristics so that I could look around and find one. And this is what they were. They'd all been men. I don't sponsor women, and I'm not sponsored by women. They had to be men who had done the 12 steps. Because the 12 steps are the programs. I need somebody that's in the program who could help me stay in the program. Well, if they haven't, at my home group, they say, if you can't anymore give away something you ain't got, then you can come back from somewhere you ain't been. And so it had to be somebody that had been there. It had to be someone who had a sponsor himself, and there are a couple of good reasons for that. One is that it means he surrendered to somebody. The second one, more important to me, is that the first time I come to him with a question he can't answer, we got a plan. We know where we're going. We're going to his sponsor. I'll tell you how good our plan is. I happen to know for a fact that his sponsor's got a sponsor. We got a great plan. It was important for me to have a sponsor who would tell me the truth. It means it has to be somebody who doesn't need me for a best friend. I need someone who will tell me what I do not want to hear. That's important to me. It has to be someone for me who's active in service work, because I think all the winners are. They're taking meetings into prisons and jails and treatment centers, and they're showing up at the detoxes, and they're secretary of their group, and they're setting up and they're tearing down, they're answering the phone. You know what the service work is. I got to have somebody who's doing that, because I need a winner. That's what I need. And I think maybe the last and probably the most important characteristic is I need a sponsor that laughs a lot. I would not have a sponsor who wasn't having a great time. Because my experience has been that the people who do this step work, who get to the 12th step, who have the spiritual awakening, and try to practice these principles in all their affairs, are having a ball. Now, there are moments when that isn't true. But overall, they're having a fantastic time. If you ever get to Nashville, look up Ice Cream Steve. He's my sponsor, and he is a nutcase of the first order, and I know he's going to hear this tape, and he will not be upset when he hears it. He'll think that was funny. You got to see this guy walk into a prison, walk into a cell with 78 convicts, and get in their face. He is not afraid, and he's having a ball. He's nuts. And I want to feel like he looks. I wouldn't have a sponsor that wasn't having a great time. Page 132 in the text, we absolutely insist on enjoying life. My sponsors need to do that. And so I looked around when Don Roy died, and there stood Ice Cream Steve. And here we are 4 years later, and he and I are still sober and just having a fabulous time. If you're new here, do somebody a favor and let them sponsor you. Do somebody a favor and let them sponsor you. I need the men that I sponsor. And the men that they sponsor, they need them. It's a wonderful thing to have the opportunity to see the light come on in somebody's eyes as they do this work. And I thought that I was, when I asked the first guy to sponsor me, I thought I was saying, I'm a dead weight, would you drag me? No, that wasn't it. What I was saying was, I think you're on the path. May I walk beside you? We will help each other. And that's been my experience in sponsorship. I believe the easiest men in this fellowship to sponsor are the men who are sponsoring newcomers themselves. Their stuff, see, I'll sit here nodding. Their issues vanish. They absolutely vanish. All of a sudden, a guy who was nuts and it wasn't going well at work and it wasn't going well at home and he had all these problems, he picks up a newcomer, and I only get 2 phone calls from him the next week. One of them is to ask me a question about sponsorship, and the other one is to tell me something absolutely hilarious that rookie has either said or done. Right? And that pattern holds from then on. And all of a sudden, his issues have vanished. Do somebody a favor. Let him sponsor you. I think it's really important. I'd like to say again that I do not consider myself to be an expert on this thing, but I am willing to try to field questions about the four-step or anything else if anybody wants to try it. And otherwise, we're going to call this a ball game. We got a microphone. If you would get on the microphone, are we still taping, Mark?
Yeah, we're taping.
Yeah, if you'd... Oh, okay. And I will get you to the barbecue on time, I promise it.
Go ahead.
I got a question. You said you'll write the name down, and then you write 19 words after that. How many times can you write that name, same name down?
Okay, first place is that's not what I said. I said you write the name, you skip one line. You write the name, you skip one line. You're already going across the page. All right. Make sure you've got your full list of names first.
Uh-huh.
Write them once. 19 words, that's it. Because, see, first place, if you work across the page, all it does is feed the resentment. You get those feelings inside like you got right now because you're thinking about whatever this is. And the second thing is, if you continue to write about it, it just feeds that. And we're not trying to feed it. We're trying to get it on paper so we can make the observations, do the prayers, and extract it. That's what it's about. 19 words. That's plenty. You can say it. Screwed me in a business deal. Doesn't treat me fairly. Beats on me. Abused me as a child. 19 words. That's my suggestion. Whatever your sponsor says, by the way, I agree with. Each has their own experience. Please go ahead.
Hi, my name is Jeff. I'm from Tampa, Florida, the Safe Haven Group. This is the first time I've ever sponsored anybody, and it happened last week, and I've got three of them right now. And I left, like, one open-ended question to these three people, and they jumped all over. I said, hey, if you want to run through the big book, if you just want to go over a few things, just let me know. And two of them let me know on one day, and one let me know on the other day. And I'm having a situation where I'm trying to manage all three, and this is the first time I've ever sponsored anybody, and the only thing I prayed for was one, and now I've got three. If you got any valuable suggestions, I'm willing to listen.
Yeah, I got a couple of them. One is you can do it as a class. Have them show up at your house at 6 o'clock on Saturday morning. Probably the most important thing I'll say is whatever your sponsor says I agree with. If you don't have one, get you a good one quick. But get through the book with them with a dictionary is what I recommend. And the other thing is I don't sponsor somebody who's not doing what I ask them to do. And I don't believe it's because I'm arrogant. It's because I can't help them. I only know one thing. I know that if they'll do these 12 steps and get active in this fellowship, their lives will be phenomenal. And if they don't, they won't. I have to be hard-nosed about it because I don't want to be somebody's sponsor record the next time he wrecks a car or goes to jail or kills somebody. I do insist, and top of page 96 in the text talks about not working with somebody who won't work with you. I remember the first time my sponsor told me to fire a guy I was sponsoring. I thought he was kidding me, and he meant it. And he asked me a great question. He said, could you stay sober on the program this guy's working? And I said, no. And he said, well, he probably can't either. He said, you've got to fire him. Because you're not his sponsor anyway, you're his fire chief. And every time his tail feathers are on fire, he calls you, he siphons off some of your serenity, would put out his smoldering tail feathers, and he goes off doing it his way again. You're not helping this guy, and he's not helping you. And I want you to go fire him, and I had to do that, because I needed to stay surrendered to my sponsor. And it was one of the best things I ever did for me, because that guy did go back to prison. He went back pretty fast after that. And it wasn't because I fired him. It was because he wasn't doing what I was asking. Because I was asking him to do little things like call his parole officer, look for a job, start reading the book, go to some meetings. I mean, it's not like I was trying to run his life. Yeah.
Yeah, I just remember one more thing. I met you about a little bit more than 2 years ago, and there was one thing that you spoke about when you were in Daytona, and it was at the end of the speech. You said, if you see a turtle on a fence post, you know he had help. Thank you.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, Mark.
That's good.
Hi, I'm Mark. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
Member of the Central Orlando group. This is probably a question that's got several questions contained in it. I don't know how many, but I'll just do the best I can with it. About the obsessive perfectionism thing that some of us can get into with this fourth step. I've written maybe 8 of them over the last 15 years, and I did this one that was straight out of the big book with this men's big book study group up in New England. And it got to the, you mentioned something about 400 names on this thing, okay? Mine, I still got it at home, had 769 names on it. But they weren't just names, they were principles and institutions.
Yeah.
So, anyway, and this is a 28-year-old guy writing this, okay? So it's pretty evident that I did not like myself or anybody in this world, because everybody I had ever met was on that list. Now, is that getting a little obsessed, a little obsessive? But let me ask, tell you why. Because in doing this, I saw, and I'll also mention that that I got drunk later on. But it wasn't just because of that. Mm-hmm. In doing this, and looking at this insurmountable task that I've created before me, or seeing it as an insurmountable task, with having doing the causes, the effects, and then the turnarounds later on, and then writing, well, was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or afraid? I saw myself as writing this thing until I became an old-timer, you know, and for the first time through the fourth step, I think I built a Frankenstein. So anyway, that was what I wanted to put out to you, along with the just touching on principles and institutions, because I think a lot of fellas, they just write out names and stuff, and
yeah,
we didn't hear much about that.
Yeah, thank you. I got a couple observations. One of them is on principles and institutions, things like communism, the Presbyterian Church, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party. What, marriage? Yeah, it's an institution. There are a number of things like that that probably need to be down there. My own experience is I don't see any problem with 700 names on the list, and let's do the deal, because it's a question of let's do the work. And I think what you'll find with a list that long is I sponsored a guy who had the California Highway Patrol on his list. Not patrolman, but patrol, all of them. I don't know how many that is, but it's quite a few. And as we began to get further into this inventory, He wanted to scratch him off the list. I said, why is that? He says, well, I don't think they did anything wrong. I said, well, tell me about it. Boy, you got him on the list here. What happened? He says, I think maybe if I hadn't been driving drunk and weaving all over the road, that they wouldn't have pulled me over in the first place. So I can't resent them for that. They were just doing their job. And it's at least possible that if I hadn't taken a swing at one of them, they wouldn't have beat me up. And I said, okay, you can scratch them off. Because what happens is that so many times these resentments are imagined. It's things that happen in my head. And I like to go through the list and have them praying for these people until they're sure that they're clean on them, that these resentments are gone. Scratch them off the list. Because I think probably a large number of years might have scratched as you got further into the process. But I don't think it matters how long it takes. When you get to that part and start realizing these people are spiritually sick, I watched one guy, and he and I could have quit right there on the resentment inventory, because we were sitting in a restaurant, and I showed it. We're covering this like we covered it tonight, and got to that part about we realized that the people who harmed us were perhaps spiritually sick. And when I said that, I saw him change. It was visible, it was physical, and it was huge. Boom, he was a different guy. You could see it. Something left him, and he still talks about it. And he said all of his resentments left at that point when he realized that they were spiritually sick. I've seen that, and I think it happens maybe a lot. A lot of times that one direction will clean off most of them, and it leaves with just a handful. It's not that difficult to get rid of them. Hi. Yeah, if you wouldn't mind going to the microphone. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sherry. I'm an alcoholic.
Sherry.
Hi. This is my 44th day of sobriety.
All right.
My hunger.
We're so glad you're here.
And my home group is the Trinity Group in St. Augustine. And I'm so grateful to everything I heard, because this has been looming over me. How do I do this? How do I do this? How do I do this? And I got a sponsor, and I'm afraid of my sponsor. And so I've really, a lot of my fears have been quelled quite a bit. I guess the fear part about the sponsorship is I was under the impression that, like, the fourth step and the fifth step are kind of, like, joined at the hip. After the explanation on the fourth step, it seems to me that, boy, you sure have talked about it probably to your sponsor a little bit, maybe, maybe not, and you certainly prayed about it and meditated on it. So I know this is jumping ahead, but what's that fifth step thing then? Because it seems like this, the way to do this fourth step, the way that you've explained it so logically, it seems like you're doing a fifth step kind of. Also, is it, am I...
Yeah, I think you're maybe a little bit ahead of yourself.
Okay.
To me, whatever your sponsor says, I say again, suits me just fine. But it's a process. I see the 10th and 11th steps run together. I see a lot of people, that, to me, they're different, but I see a lot of people mixing them together. I think that's great. What we have is a process. We have a way to get you cleaned out of your garbage. For me, the fifth step is a confession, very simply, where I did my fourth step pretty much by myself. But when I sit down with a sponsor, it is, in effect, a confession. I can show you the directions there on page 75. Matter of fact, our directions on how to take a fifth step is one sentence. Isn't that astonishing? And we have no directions on how to hear one, none whatsoever. It says we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Illuminating means to shine the light in. And that's what a fifth step is. And we have no directions on how to hear a fifth step. And so all I have is what my lineage gave me. And in my lineage, we don't listen to fifth steps. We exchange. And I would not hear your fifth step. I would be unwilling to do that. But if I were to hear to his, he would hear not all of mine, but the worst five or six things. Whether he had done them or not, I'd get them in because I've got to keep them clean. My experience with my first fifth step was that I did not get the fifth step promises, which are the middle paragraph on page 75. Very powerful if you haven't read them. Didn't happen for me because I knew when I walked out of that first fifth step that that stuff would never see the light of day again. And consequently, it was not available for God's use. And about a year later, I was sitting in the old Woodbine Clubhouse in Nashville. And after the meeting, there's a woman sitting at the end of the table just bawling her eyes out. And two or three trying to comfort her, and she just sobbing. And I walked up and said, "What's wrong?" And she told me, and she had done the very worst thing I'd ever done. And I knew what I had to do. And I sat down and told her my story. And you're going to hear that tomorrow. I'm not going to do it now. You'll hear it tomorrow morning. And I told her how I got free. And I walked out of that clubhouse crying, and I hadn't learned to cry yet. I have learned since then. And I walked out of there about 3 feet off the ground. And my own perspective today is that I am two things. I'm God's caddy. I carry all of these things from my fifth step. All of these worst parts of my past are available to my God for use any way he wants to use them. I still carry them, but the pain and the weight is gone. I've received his forgiveness. And the thing that keeps them clean is my willingness for him to use them. And we're going to do that tomorrow. I don't want to, but it's something that I know I have to do because I've seen so many people helped, and that's why I do it. So I have to be available. I'm God's caddy. And the 12th step says I'm trying to carry the message. That makes me an apprenticed messenger. I figure if I was a messenger, I'd be carrying it. And when I hold that attitude, I'm an apprenticed messenger, and I'm a caddy. I do pretty good. That's my job. But you've got a big bite here in front of you, this fourth step. I have thrown a ton at you here. Get with your sponsor and work in little bitty pieces. Sometimes the willingness to do the next step comes from the previous step. Don't look ahead at some of this stuff. If I could tell you about my 1998, I had the privilege of coaching four newcomers through the step work. Started with five. One was unwilling. Four. They're all sponsoring people today. I watched the lights come on in so many eyes. And I watched them go through the terrifying ninth step of making amends. I watched a family reunited. I watched miracle upon miracle upon miracle. I heard reports on the phone of guys crying about the fantastic things that happened in the terrifying ninth step. I saw no one hurt by it. It was astonishing. I was wrong about so many things. Thanks. Do you have something else? Thank you. Does anyone else? Sid, are you going to talk to us? Are you walking out?
No, my name is Sid, and I'm a member of the Annie Lentz Group in Ormond Beach, Florida.
Hi, Sid.
Part of my service work is to work with DOC people in a treatment center here in Daytona Beach, the Reality House. And one Sunday afternoon, I was sitting with a client, and we're going over the third step. And I say this because I'm sure other people assume, as I do, that we understand who or what God is. And we're talking about the God thing, and this person said to me, what kind of thing or person is your God? I said, well, I was brought up in Scotland where we were told, you better be good for goodness sake so you'll be outrun in the flames of hell licking at your behind. And I said, 1952, I came over here and I said, the American God, I found out, was a loving and forgiving father. And I've thought that and known that for those 52 years. And all of a sudden, this person said, well, you see, that's my difficulty. It may be okay for you to believe in Father in Heaven is a loving and forgiving father. He said, in my case, my father abused me until I left home at 16. What can I do about that? And I'll listen to you this afternoon, and my answer truly was glib, and I feel ashamed to repeat what I told them. And I said, well, if you die and go to heaven, it won't make any difference anyway. End of story.
Thanks.
But the point is, we just assume that the other person sees a God or whatever it may be as we see them. And I was wrong. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's really important, particularly if someone's been abused in a religion or in some way. I want to make my offer one more time, and I'm going to close. I'll take this. Go ahead.
I'm George, an alcoholic.
Hi, George.
I've had three sponsors, and none of them have pushed me to do the steps, or particularly the fourth step. I thoroughly understand 1 through 3. I've studied them a lot. Maybe I'm just looking for one more tip. I don't know. Trying to find a sponsor who I feel comfortable with and who will, you know, take me through the fourth step. I had 5.5 years sober, and then some things happened in my life. I slipped, and I've been slipping since. But I now have 2.5 weeks.
Wow. Welcome back. I'm so glad you made it.
Thank you. I don't intend to slip again because I'm going to do the work and work the steps.
Yeah. I think it's fair to interview a potential sponsor to ask the question, have you done the steps? Will you coach me through the steps? Mm. How did you do a fourth step? What do you do in a fifth step? What do you believe about 9? Tell me about your God. Those are fair questions. Mm. You know, all of my life they assigned me teachers. All of my life. Mm. They don't do that here. Mm. I get to choose my mentors here. Choose well. And I don't need a sponsor I can relate to. I never needed that. I need a sponsor I will obey. And I will only obey one that's having a great time, that is carrying the message. And I think if you'll take a look at what I talked about, a guy who's done the steps, who has a sponsor, who will tell you the truth, who's active in service, and who laughs a lot, you'll probably find the guy you're looking for. And you may not like him. You know, don't need to like him. I just need one I'll obey. And I got one. And I'm so blessed. But the light's on. The lights are on. And the people who've done this step work has been my experience. I'd like to say something else, and I'll probably say it tomorrow. Thank you. And that's that in my tenure, I have not yet seen anyone in and out of the program. I ain't seen it yet. I've heard it, but on close inspection, I haven't seen it. In and out of the fellowship, you betcha, I've seen train loads. I have not seen anyone do these 12 steps, take the 12 steps, whatever you want to call the action verb, and stay active in this fellowship and drink. Have you seen it, Sid? Murphy? I haven't seen it. Don't expect to. This program doesn't fail. We fail to do it. We have a tradition that says the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. That is not the only requirement for sobriety. That's why I'm so glad to see you all here. Because there's a guy in Nashville that says, if I could give every newcomer coming through the door one thing, just one thing, it'd be 500 cc's of desperation right in the butt. Just load them right up. Those who are desperate enough to actually do this work are going to live a phenomenal life. And that has been my experience, and I have not seen exceptions to that. Hi.
Hi, this is Jeff again. I'm double dipping. You were mentioning something before about willingness, and as I mentioned before, I'm sponsoring 3 people. 2 of them I'm not spending very much time with, but they're picking it up right away. This one guy I'm spending hours upon hours upon hours, He comes into the club the next day, whoops, I slipped again. And this has been going on for a period of about a week or so. And he'll listen to this tape because I'll get it. Would you please give some advice to him?
No, I'd give some to you.
Okay.
My sponsor does not allow me to work at Losers. As soon as we can establish that someone's not doing what I ask them to do, I'm instructed to drop them. He says he'd rather have me on the golf course. It's better for my program. It's pretty harsh. Miss Linda and I did a couple hours on sponsorship in Mississippi. I don't know whether Lee's got it or not, but we talk about that rather in depth. And we're going to run out of time. I'll be glad to talk to you in depth about that tonight, and I'd love to. But I can't drag somebody. It's not good for them. It's not good for me. As a sponsor, it's my responsibility to give assignments. I had the privilege last year of picking up a man who had 27 years of sobriety. I am very impressed with how much sobriety he has. But I can't afford, he can't afford for me to be impressed by it. Man needs a sponsor, and he asked me, and I'm honored. And I only know one thing to do. I took him through the book. That's all I know how to do. And he hadn't seen the fourth step like this. And you ought to hear him talk about it. I got goosebumps all over me. The ones who do the deal are the ones I need to work with. I'm sponsoring a lot of guys. I got room for one more winner. That sign's always hanging out. I'll take one more winner because they're so easy to work with. But I ain't got time to drag anybody that's not doing the deal. I want to make good my offer one more time. If somebody feels like they've got committed the unforgivable sin, please see me and let me tell you about mine. And maybe we can get you some relief. And I really mean that. If you're holding something that you think is just the end of it, please see me and let's talk about it. I know a God that can handle it. And I'd like to say thank you all for the opportunity to pass on what has so freely been given to me. I have seen the light come on in so many eyes at step four, where we faced and were rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Isn't it astounding? The fourth step is not about writing. I thank y'all so much. And let's just close with the Lord's Prayer. Thanks a lot, Mark.